afternoon again. Thank you. You may be seated.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Chris Bartolomucci for the Bipartisan Legal Advisory Group of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you. And before I begin, the House would like to echo prior sentiments and extend its condolences to all of those loved ones of Ellen Farley. I think that's appropriate to observe before
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Go further. Your Honor, the House takes no position on whether this court needs to reach the issue of DOMA's constitutionality. However, if the court does reach that issue, we believe that the answer is clear, that DOMA does comport with the equal protection component of the Fifth Amendment and other constitutional guarantees. And we believe that the Supreme Court's decision in Baker versus Nelson controls this case. Baker stands for the proposition that the traditional definition of marriage as used by a state government does not violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. That holding is binding in this case as to DOMA because equal protection analysis under the Fifth Amendment is no different than under the 14th Amendment. The Supreme Court so held in the Adirond case and in other cases that came before that. The Baker versus Nelson ruling is also binding. Now, it's not binding on the Supreme Court. Of course, if this issue or a similar issue were to get to the Supreme Court, it would be that court's prerogative to say that they disagreed with Baker or that it didn't control the question before them. But Baker is, as a Supreme Court judgment on the merits, it is indeed binding on all lower courts. So unless and until the Supreme Court instructs otherwise, Baker is a binding precedent. And I would like to bring to this court's attention a Third Circuit case. It's not a case that the House cited in its briefs, and I apologize for that, but I would like to bring to this court's attention a Third Circuit case called Colorado Springs Amusements versus Rizzo, which is reported at 524 F. 2nd, 571. And the Colorado Springs case...
When was that decided?
It's a Third Circuit case.
No, what year?
That 1975, I believe. And the Colorado Springs case, we bring it to Your Honor's attention in part because it's a Third Circuit case and also because it very strongly supports the House's mode of analysis with respect to Baker versus Nelson. The Rizzo case involved a Philadelphia city ordinance that prohibited opposite-sex massage in massage parlors. In other words, it said a masseuse in a massage parlor may not give a massage to a person of the opposite sex, and it was an ordinance aimed at curbing illegal prostitution. That ordinance was challenged on equal protection grounds. The plaintiffs there said this is a sex-based classification and it violates equal protection. The case went to the Third Circuit, and the Third Circuit said this has been decided by the Supreme Court. There were three other challenges to very similar city ordinances enacted elsewhere. Those ordinances were a lot like the Philadelphia ordinance, and the Supreme Court in these three cases dismissed challenges for want of a substantial federal question, just as the court had done in Baker. And the Third Circuit's, I think it's very interesting, the Third Circuit's mode of analysis was very, very similar to the mode of analysis that the House has presented in its briefing regarding Baker versus Nelson. The Third Circuit went to the jurisdictional statements that were filed in those three Supreme Court cases and said, yeah, the statutes at issue there are very similar to the ones at issue here. The petitioners, or appellants actually, raised equal protection challenges. The court dismissed those cases. That's a judgment on the merits, and that controls here. And that was essentially the end of the Third Circuit's analysis. So obviously the Third Circuit was tackling a different question, but they tackled it in precisely the way that the House believes this court should tackle it with respect to the Baker versus Nelson decision. But even if Baker were not on the books, this case would have to be decided under the rational basis test. That is to say, DOMA as a statute that does not classify based on a suspect classification and does not classify based upon a fundamental right would be judged under the rational basis test. And that's supported by every circuit court of appeals that has faced the question of whether a classification based on sexual orientation is subject to rational basis review or some sort of heightened scrutiny. And all 11 of the circuits that have tackled that question, and the Third Circuit is not one of them, but the 11 circuits that have faced the question have uniformly held that sexual orientation classifications are judged under the very deferential rational basis test.
What would you advise in Galinsky?
I was going to address the Galinsky case, Your Honor. Now, the Galinsky case is the only Article III court to hold that DOMA is subject to some form of heightened scrutiny, and that decision is on appeal. The House believes it was wrongly decided. It is, of course, not binding on this court. And frankly, Your Honor, the Galinsky holding is contrary to multiple decisions of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Ninth Circuit has held, including in the case of Witt versus Department of the Air Force, that sexual orientation classifications are subject to rational basis review. The Galinsky District Court felt that these decisions, these circuit decisions, were, quote, outdated and decided not to follow them. And this is not a path that we would encourage Your Honor to take. We think that the very, very great weight of authority, the 11 circuit dispositions, is more compelling than the lone Galinsky decision, which we're appealing, and we'll see where that ends up.
In the Massachusetts case?
The Massachusetts case was decided under the rational basis standard. That's the Gill case, and that's also on appeal. In fact, it's being orally argued next month. But
April 12th, I believe.
April 4, but that's a case where the judge did apply the rational basis test, so he got that much right. You know, we think he applied it incorrectly, but he did not go as far as the judge in the Galinsky case. He did not say that DOMA or sexual orientation classifications were subject to any form of heightened review. He applied the rational basis test, although in our view,
is it your position that to look at these properly, that a record would be made or needs to be made from expert witnesses testifying regarding the subject matter?
Not at all, Your Honor. I think Your Honor's Your Honor can review the 11 circuit decisions on this issue, which address the various factors that go into the heightened scrutiny test, and conclude that these courts got it right. These are matters of legislative facts rather than adjudicative facts. The facts that relate to whether DOMA is subject to heightened scrutiny or whether sexual orientation classifications are subject to heightened scrutiny are not facts that for which you would need to have a trial or any sort of an evidentiary hearing. They're legislative facts of which the court can take judicial notice. And frankly, I think the court really need do little more than review the 11 circuit court decisions that have come out in favor of the application of the rational basis test.
Are you aware of any subsequent cases that address the Baker versus Nelson?
Yes, Your Honor. In the Wilson versus Ake, which was a constitutional challenge to DOMA, the Middle District of Florida held that Baker is binding and controlling. So the Middle District of Florida agreed foursquare with our position that Baker decides this issue of the constitutionality of DOMA. Now, the Galinsky court disagreed, but it dismissed Baker in about a sentence or two in a footnote, which we think is not sufficient analysis for a binding Supreme Court precedent. But if Your Honor is looking for an example of a court that agreed with us on Baker as to DOMA, that would be the Wilson versus Ake decision. DOMA is supported by multiple rational bases, and before I begin to discuss them, I would point out to Your Honor that the Department of Justice agrees with the House of Representatives to this extent, at least, that if DOMA is judged under the rational basis test. DOMA, in fact, does satisfy that rational basis review. That's a position that they've taken in several pending DOMA cases, and I don't think counsel will disagree with that assessment today. Of course, the Department of Justice's position is that heightened scrutiny should apply, but if that's not the test, if the court follows the 11th Circuit precedents and applies rational basis, I think the Department of Justice and the House end up in the same place, that DOMA would meet that test. Now, in 1996, when Congress enacted DOMA, Congress had a decision to make. After the Hawaii Supreme Court had ruled as it did in the Bear case, Congress saw that same-sex marriage was coming, and it did come. Congress saw that same-sex marriage was going to come to the states, to some of them in some form or another, and Congress had to make a decision. It could, and it really had three choices. Congress could have decided to define marriage within the meaning of federal law to include same-sex marriages. Congress could have decided to continue to defer to the states and say, whatever you regard as a marriage for federal law, which would have resulted in a patchwork of different state laws. Or, third, Congress could have decided and did decide to do what it did in DOMA, that is to say, to enact a definition that said Congress will continue to adhere to the traditional centuries-old definition of marriage for purposes of federal law only. And this is an important feature of DOMA for Your Honor to recognize. DOMA does not forbid any marriages. DOMA does not attempt to void any marriages that the parties enter into. DOMA only says that for purposes of federal law and the dispensing of federal benefits that turn on the marital status, that Congress would continue to use the traditional definition that has always been used in this country, that marriage means the lawful union of one adult man and one adult woman. And we think that decision can hardly be described as irrational. When you're talking about the nation's most important social institution, which I think no one would disagree with, it was very rational for Congress to take a proceed with caution approach. While the states, our laboratories of democracy, experimented with same-sex marriage, it was rational for Congress to say, well, we're going to stick with the traditional definition. Of course, future Congresses can revisit that judgment. But as important as marriage is, if the states are going to tinker with variations in the definition, you know, we're not going to, at least for now. And we think that supplies a wholly rational basis for DOMA, as does the need to be uniform in terms of federal benefits. If Congress had merely continued to defer to the states, you would have some states where same-sex couples could become married and qualify for federal benefits, and there would be other states where a same-sex couple could not be married, where no same-sex marriage license would be issued, and they would not be eligible for federal benefits. And it certainly is a rational basis for Congress to decide to have a uniform definition and therefore a uniform eligibility requirement for federal benefits. It was also rational for Congress to believe that they would be conserving the public fisc by defining marriage as they did. There are more than 1,000 federal statutes that make benefits turn on the definition of the word marriage, and it certainly would have been rational for Congress to conclude that, well, if we're expanding the definition of marriage and there will be more marriages that are eligible for marital benefits, that will cost more money. And saving money is always a rational benefit for congressional action. Some would hope that they would be even more rational in that regard some of the time. Now, counsel for Ms. Tobitz made the argument that DOMA withdrew benefits from same-sex couples, and that's simply not the case. Since there had never been same-sex marriage in this country prior to DOMA, There had never been any federal benefits that were dispensed on the basis of a same-sex marriage before DOMA, and DOMA adhered to the traditional definition. So there had never been any benefits that were previously available, which were then withdrawn. Opposing counsel also made the argument that the court should view DOMA as having been based on moral disapproval of gays and lesbians, and we would quarrel with that too, Your Honor. The Defense of Marriage Act garnered 477 votes in the Congress out of a possible 535, and each of those members of Congress who voted for it had their own reasons for doing so. The legislative history does include statements by certain individual members of Congress that they disapproved of homosexual conduct or same-sex marriage, but you certainly can't ascribe that to the will of the Congress. And bear in mind that it takes two branches of government to enact a law, and DOMA was signed into law by President Clinton, and I would not think, and I haven't heard opposing counsel argue, that President Clinton's decision to sign DOMA into law was somehow based upon any type of moral disapproval. So there are multiple rational bases for DOMA. Others are set forth in our briefs, and I won't repeat them here. With respect to heightened scrutiny, whether sexual orientation classifications should be treated for some kind of heightened scrutiny, I would like to point out this fact, Your Honor. It's been more than 40 years since the Supreme Court has recognized a new suspect classification. What that tells me is that there is a very high bar to get into that club. I mean, arguments have been raised in the Supreme Court that the disabled, the elderly, the poor should be treated as suspect classes, and the Supreme Court has simply declined to go there again and again. So I think there's a very high bar. I think it's not possible to describe the gay rights movement as politically powerless, which certainly is one of the factors they would have to demonstrate in order to qualify for any form of heightened scrutiny. We now have in this country 9 states that fully embrace same-sex marriage. There are another 8 that permit civil unions and essentially give all of the benefits of marriage without calling it a marriage. Only in the last few weeks, the states of Maryland and Washington have joined the list of states that permit same-sex marriage. My understanding is that current opinion polling says that a majority of Americans actually favors recognition of same-sex marriages. So to the extent that political power follows from popular views, I think that polling data is very interesting. The Congress of the United States last year repealed the Don't Ask, Don't Tell statute. I mean, that shows you that the Congress is open to hearing and being persuaded by arguments that a statute like DADT that classified based on sexual orientation should be repealed, and they did that. And let's look at DOMA itself. The Defense of Marriage Act is not supported by the current administration. The President of the United States has said he thinks it should be repealed. He thinks it's unconstitutional. And he's instructed his Department of Justice not to defend it in court, and in fact, to go to court and argue that the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. So I think there's a lot of evidence that the movement for marriage equality has significant political power. With respect to sex discrimination, Your Honor has asked some questions about whether DOMA should be viewed as a form of sex discrimination and therefore undergo heightened scrutiny on that basis. We would disagree with that proposition, and our argument would be, and is, that DOMA does not disfavor either gender. It treats both men and women the same, and therefore does not constitute sex discrimination. And there is not a single Article III court that has held that DOMA constitutes sex discrimination and on that basis imposed any form of heightened scrutiny. Judge Walker, it was mentioned that Judge Walker viewed a different law, California's Proposition 8, as a form of sex discrimination. And I would observe for Your Honor that the Ninth Circuit, when the Ninth Circuit subsequently ruled in the Perry case, they did not agree with that. They did not rule that Proposition 8 was sex discrimination. In fact, they issued a very narrow ruling. So that case did not involve DOMA, even when it was before Judge Walker. And there is no article, at least no Article 3 precedent, for Your Honor to cite for the view that DOMA should receive heightened scrutiny because of based on the theory that it constitutes sex discrimination. So I won't use all of my time, as I don't think it's necessary. But I will conclude with this, Your Honor, that fundamental principles of judicial restraint would counsel against declaring DOMA unconstitutional. The democratic process is working precisely as it was intended to do. The states are considering same-sex marriages. Some states are permitting them, some aren't. That's democracy. The classifications based on sexual orientation are not suspect classifications. Therefore, Your Honor's only role, if it chooses to decide whether DOMA is constitutional, is to apply the rational basis test, as 11 circuits have held, and for the multiple reasons that the House has set forth in its brief, we think that DOMA easily passes the rational basis test, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.